I'm joined today by Piero Toffanin, a software engineer and user experience designer. Thank you for joining me, Piero.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself, please?
Okay, well, I'm an Italian software developer. I immigrated to the United States first to go to college, and then I met my wife. In 2014, earlier this year, I decided to quit my job. I bought a pop-up camper, and I started traveling the States with my wife. And I work on cool projects for my company, Maserano Laboratories, and that helps me pay for a trip's expenses. So I pretty much work while on the road. I don't work in an office. My typical place to work is the great outdoors. It could be a campground. It could be near a hill or sometimes a mountain, by a lake. Just whatever is outside, it really, really is my place where I work.
So you... So you were working full-time for that company prior to this trip?
Okay, so I opened the company as I was preparing to go on the trip. So it's mainly just myself working at the company. It's more of a entity that protects my personal liabilities. It's good to have a company when you do the type of work that software engineers do.
So it's something like an LLC or a C corp or something of that nature.
Right. I could have just kept it as a sole proprietorship, but I really wanted to have that protection in case somebody decided to go after me for a patent lawsuit or whatever. There's as you might know, the patent litigations with software are kind of crazy these days, especially in this country. And so I didn't want to take any chances that somebody might come and say, "Hey, this work you're doing is infringing. We're going to take everything you have."
I've recorded a podcast that's coming out soon with a lawyer who went through the various reasons why you would set up a corporation of some sort to protect yourself. That'll be coming out sometime in November, I think.
I completely agree.
So what prompted you to pack it all in and head on the road?
It's a, how do you explain it? I saw many people retiring when they're aged, 67, 68, 70, and they all wish that they did things when they were younger. And so I looked at myself, I'm a young person, and I thought, do I want to do like the rest and wait till I'm 70 to do the things I want to do and see the places that I want to see, or should I take my chances, take up some risk, and do it now rather than do it later? So that was probably the main reason why I decided to do this. It's to do the things that I want to do and see the places that I want to see while I'm at a young age, instead of waiting for the typical retirement.
So was there some event that prompted you to do this?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Was there a single event that prompted you, or was this something that had been growing in your mind for a long time?
Well, I have been reading about digital nomads and people that work while moving from place to place before, but it wasn't until I picked up this book about investments, which was a total surprise to me because I was expecting to find some information about personal finance and investment strategies, but it turned out to be more of a life story, and that book was called Live on Margin, which is on the list I've submitted to you. It's one of the first books on the list. Very, very mind-opening and just an interesting story to read.
So you decided to leave the full-time job. Did you have a home you had to leave or sell?
No, I didn't have a home, which kind of helped getting started. I know some people might have a lot of things that they bought and they own and they might need to get rid of, but in my case, luckily, I didn't have much to begin with. I already immigrated from Italy, so I didn't bring much with me when I came here to the States. So you could say it was a little easier for me to get started.
But I imagine there was still quite a lot of preparation that had to go into something like this.
Well, yes. There was definitely some thought that I would put into it. We had to think... we no longer had coverage, for example, for health insurance by our employers, my wife and I, so we had to go and research how to get our own. We had to plan where we're going to go, how we were going to finance this trip, how long we could finance it for without having a reliable income. And so a little bit of preparation really was needed. But we're doing okay so far, so that's good.
But did you find that there were easy solutions to all these problems?
You mean easy solutions?
Yeah. Was it easy to get that health insurance? Was it easy to figure out how much money you would need? Was it easy to put up?
I really think that, most of these tasks are simple logistics. If you do some research and you plan farther ahead, you tackle each single logistic issue one at a time. So maybe these 2 days we decided we're going to take care of our health insurance. These other 2 days we're going to do the planning of the trip. These other 2 days we're going to look for pop-up campers and RVs, and then this other week we'll go and explore all these places for these possible pop-up campers we want to buy, and then this other week we'll go and actually purchase a pop-up camper. So it took us around two and a half months to get everything going before we actually left our place where we were living, but nothing was really, really difficult. It was just a lot of patience and time.
So a camper you chose to go with instead of, let's say, going into hostels and moving around, was that just for freedom and flexibility?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
So you chose to get a camper as opposed to, let's say, driving in a regular car and staying in hostels. Was that for flexibility or for cost efficiency or comfort?
It was a choice between comfort and necessity. I knew that if I wanted to get my business running, I had to have a place where I could sit and do work on a computer in cases where the weather is not cooperating. And working in a car, I've done it before. It's really not that pleasant. The posture is really awkward, and your back starts hurting after an hour or two. So I knew I needed something that had a bare minimum, a table, some beds, and a kitchen. So those were kind of bare minimum, and a pop-up camper seemed to be the logical choice. We did not choose to go with hostels because it ends up being more expensive. You have to consider that when you go if you stay at hotels and hostels, not only you're paying for your stay, you also have to pay to eat out all the time. Whereas if you have a small kitchen, you can cook your own food, and that turns out to be a lot of savings.
What about, some of the practicalities like keeping your laptops charged, getting internet signals, and so on?
Okay, so charging the laptop, the pop-up that we have comes with a pretty big battery that we can use to charge the laptop multiple times. I can charge it up to 10 times before the main battery dies. Then every place that we stay at, they virtually always have outlets where you can plug in and in half an hour, you have a full charge. We also have some smaller solar panels in case we really don't have any electricity, and tend to take a long time to charge since we don't have a big setup. But we could say that electric is really not a problem. Also, as we're driving, we can plug in an adapter that will convert the 12-volt DC output from the car into a 19-volt that the laptop can use. So anytime we're driving, which is quite often, we can simply plug it in and get a full charge out of the laptop. As for internet, we do a combination of using Wi-Fi hotspots whenever they're available. We hunt them like hawks. And then we look. If that's not available, we use our cell phones. We tether the connection from our phones, and there we have most of the times internet available. And sometimes you just have to go without. So you do plan ahead to be offline by default, so you plan for the worst. And then if you find internet, it's like, oh, nice, we have internet.
Yeah, so we kind of just had that problem ourselves. We were meant to make our call on Skype with video and all that, but there wasn't enough bandwidth for video. We tried audio, there wasn't enough bandwidth for that, so we're down to the good old telephone system, which so far seems to be fine in your location. But I imagine that must be somewhat frustrating at times. I mean, I, as an engineer, I'm on Stack Overflow, I'm on Google, I'm searching forums, a good 10% of the day for information. What do you do?
Well, I must agree.
So I presume that must hinder you to some degree?
I totally agree. I mean, internet is super valuable as software engineers. And, but you know, what you do is you plan ahead. If I know I am working on some project and I need the docs for that project available, I will download them ahead of time. If I have the need to use source control, I will find a solution that allows me to do source control without a central cloud location. If I need to do backups, I cannot use the cloud. If I need to do photo sharing, I will delay that until I have internet. So there are the right tools to do a lot of the work offline, and then once you find a hotspot, you seem to do a simple syncing activity, and voila. I remember, for example, a few weeks ago, I was working on this web app on my local computer, and I had no internet. As soon as I found the hotspot, I simply connected to it, I pressed the button, and I deployed my work line for everybody to see, and it worked just fine. It really depends on the work, of course. Sometimes you will need internet to do certain things. If I need to, for example, work with the customers and I need to be available for the customer, I will travel and I will find a place where I have reliable internet. I will not be sitting in a place where there is no reliable internet when I need it for my work. So it really depends on the project that I'm involved with and if I can be okay not having internet.
So speaking of that work, how did you start to find work when you left your full-time job?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
How did you start looking for work when you were after leaving your full-time job?
Okay, so so far what has worked for me is to find people from referrals. So I knew some people prior to leaving my day job, and through them I was able to find some work that has helped me stay away for the trip. I wouldn't recommend at this point looking into some freelancing platforms. I have tried to look work onto places like Odesk or Elance or you name it. There's dozens marketplace people that want to do work on a project basis. The problem with those sites is that you're competing with a global marketplace, and there are a lot of places, a lot of developers that are from third world countries, and that really puts you at the mercy of competition in terms of rates. And I find that it's really, really difficult to find something valuable out of those places. There are exceptions, of course. I just think that it's really not the way to go. The best way to go about it is know people, meet people. Whenever I stop in a big city, I try to find a meetup, and I do networking through those meetups. I meet people, I talk to people, and usually good things happen.
And you are blogging about everywhere you go at the moment, is that right?
That is correct, yes. I try to throw in a blog post every few weeks. I've been slacking a bit past 2 months, but I'll be back on full track in the near future.
So what places have you visited on your trip so far?
Well, we have been through, I can name you the states that we visited. We went through North Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, New York, North Carolina, Virginia, Pennsylvania. So we've covered a lot of the ground, and this has only been 5 months. So we're very excited to explore more places and find new sites to see and meet new people. It's really, really exciting.
So on a day-to-day basis, how do you split your time between the good old work life and this wonderful adventure?
Well, like everybody will want to always be on vacation. So ideally, I will want to go hike and explore the outdoors 24/7. Of course, that's not a sustainable way. So I really try to, and I do, make a very good split between the time that I have off and the time that I dedicate to my work. Usually my mornings are I dedicate around 5 hours, 5-6 hours every day working, and that's mainly in the mornings from let's say 8 to 3, around that time. And then after 3, I can say, okay, I'm done. Let's go explore. Let's go find a place to hike or let's go find a beach to swim or a mountain to hike. It's really up to us, and it's great. There will be times where I'll say I'm taking a full day off, maybe to hike this very difficult trail that requires several hours, and then I'll be sure to put a full day of work the day after or in the days that follow.
So at the moment, a few weeks ago, I think you said you were up in Toronto, but you wanted to get away from the cold, so you're quite a bit further south now.
I'm sorry, what was that?
A few weeks ago, I think you said you were up in Toronto, but the cold wasn't so nice, so you headed south?
We did visit Niagara Falls on the Canadian side, and it was getting a little chilly, so we did head south, and we're currently in North Carolina, where we have a astonishing 74 degrees during the day and most of the evenings, which is really, really great. makes the whole living in the camper situation much more enjoyable.
Yeah, I can tell you, up in Boston just a few days ago, around the 4th or 5th of October, we were down to about 7 Celsius in the morning. So what's that, about 41, 42 Fahrenheit? So, So will you continue progress?
That's a bit chilling.
Will you continue progressing southwards as winter comes?
Yes, we definitely want to try to stay away from the cold. Living in a camper when it's cold is not exactly the best way to go about it, I think. Of course, there will be people that just love the cold. I'm not one of those people.
So,
yes, we will be heading farther south as winter comes closer.
And is your wife, she's also doing something similar with work-wise?
My wife, yes. She's an accountant, and she has been doing some studying in that regard. So she continues to work on her skills, and she's looking to just expand her knowledge on other fields that are not exactly accounting. So she's kind of looking to taking a few courses for continuing education. And so it's working out for her.
No, but of course it is easier for us in the software industry, because unless the customer requires face-to-face meetings, you can pretty much work from anywhere. Preferable if you're in a similar time zone.
Right. It is a great luck, I think. There are many professions that this type of life just wouldn't work because not compatible. You can't do certain works from remote. That's just a fact of life. And so I think that us as software engineers, we're so lucky to have this opportunity that for us not to take it is maybe missing out. Just maybe. Then it depends on the person and person's goals and aspirations. But the opportunity is out there. And I hope that if somebody listens to this podcast and they've been having the idea tickling in their mind, I think they should consider it, because it really is out there.
So one of the things I think a lot of software engineers find a little bit daunting as well is the idea of consulting on the side. Consulting full-time. So you've done two things. You've given up the full-time job to go consulting full-time, but you've also given up a fixed city. And I think for a lot of people, that's quite a worrying thing. What did you have a hard time transitioning to this?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the last part of the question?
Was it difficult for you to transition from living in a fixed house city to living in a camper van and moving every few days?
Well, it is. You know, everything comes compromise. I receive a lot of comments from people on the web saying that, what I'm doing is awesome. I live the dream of everybody on earth. But the truth is that everything comes with compromises. So you get the flexibility of moving and seeing new places every day, but you're also sacrificing the stability of staying in one single place. And that has complications. For example, if you're trying to do work for somebody, there is a lot of people that would not consider my consulting experience because they say, we need somebody to be here, we need somebody to be around. And so there's pros and cons to consider. It's never a free ride, you could say.
No, I think you've said to me before that you get a lot of people saying, "Oh, I wish I could do that," but it really is a choice. Like earlier this year, my wife and I, we took off. She had a sabbatical. I left my work. We went traveling for about 2 months, and I got repeatedly the comment, "I wish I could do that," from people. But it really is, as you say, a compromise. You choose to give up that stability. You take the risk of potentially not finding a job for a little while, and you pack your bags and off you go. And yes, as you say, you do it when you're young and you're able to, because you never know when you won't be able to.
Correct. I totally agree.
Have you crossed paths with anyone else doing something like what you're doing?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
In any of the cities you've been to, have you met anyone at meetups who's also traveling and working?
Not personally, no, I have not yet. We've met a lot of older gentlemen who are now retired and they're traveling a lot. Buddy who's young and is doing, splitting life between work and traveling, I currently have not met personally. But there are a lot of people that I connected to, especially on Twitter, that are doing exactly the same thing that my wife and I are doing.
It's nice to hear that it's becoming more common. Are they based in the U.S. or are they in other countries?
Some of them are in the U.S., some are in Southeast Asia, some others are venturing in Europe. I will say that it's mostly common here in the U.S., just because I think we're a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of workplace revolution, in terms of accepting people working from remote and support, and that might be part of the case, but then again, there's people that do it in other countries as well. I wouldn't say the U.S. is alone.
No, I think you're right. There is a bit of a shift in the whole work patterns. Companies are becoming much more accepting of people working remotely, working from home. Like even in Boston, the number of shared workspaces that have appeared in the last few years has been astounding. A few years back, I was talking with a company slightly geographically remote, and I was saying to them, I can come to their office a few times a month, but I want to work from a shared working space the rest of the time. And there was really only two choices in the city back then, whereas now I can rattle off probably 5 or 6. And it seems to be a much more acceptable thing for people, and it's great to see it.
Yes, I must agree with you. There is definitely a shift happening, and hopefully we'll continue in this direction.
How long do you think you're going to go on your trip?
At the moment, it's really undecided. I do believe that at some point in my life, I will decide that I want to settle somewhere. I'm just not sure when that time will happen. It's so early to say.
I imagine seeing all the very best places. It becomes a little bit addictive. I found myself that, when you're changing towns, changing places every few days, you kind of want to keep that flow going.
Yeah, and that is definitely the feeling that I'm having right now. But then again, as individuals, we go through stages in life. And so the fact that I'm feeling this to explore places may not be here with me in 10 or 20 years or who knows how long. Maybe tomorrow I'll wake up and say, okay, that's it. I want to find a place and stay there.
Yeah, but at least you'll have explored both options and you'll feel comfortable transitioning again, because I think it's really about doing what you want when you want.
A lot
of people become far too worried.
Our perception of the world and our perception of what is a good place to live, what are things that we like to have, is all relative. And the only way to get a very good perspective in life is to see new places and try new things and just explore what's out there. Otherwise, you do not have that relativeness that allows you to make objective decisions.
No, I completely
agree. Maybe just a little circle that you have around you. And if you don't push that circle to see what's out there, your perception of the world will be very limited.
Now, I must say, I've been on two longer trips in my life, and they've both been incredible experiences, which changed me without a doubt. You know, you wouldn't necessarily be aware of it immediately after you come back, but in the months and years afterwards, you'd feel the influences of the things you've seen, the places you've been. And it is a changing experience for anyone that hasn't tried it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree.
So aside from, let's say, the technical challenges, I just want to get back to that other thing that you face. What other challenges does being on the road, what other challenges do you face when you're on the road all the time?
Well, let's see. Weather is sometimes can be a little bit of a problem. I'll be outside doing my work, and so here comes a nasty thunderstorm. There's really nothing you can do about that. It's not just go inside a car or inside a sturdy building, because it's coming and you just have to deal with it. And thunderstorms tend to happen quite often, depending where you are, of course. But they do happen. And other things, probably just, keeping an open mind about the places you see, the people you meet. You never know really what to expect. Sometimes you may read a very good reviews about a campground, and then you'll arrive here and things will not be the way that they showed it to you in the reviews or on their website. The Wi-Fi may not be working like they promised. The beautiful beach that they were talking about is just a swamp next to the ocean that you don't even want to touch. So there are things that you have to be open-minded about, but that is really okay. I wouldn't say it's really a challenge. It's just a thing to keep in mind as you travel, to just keep an open mind, and whatever happens, happens, and learn to deal with things.
Yeah, I
suppose. People break. We were in the middle of our travels, and one day we opened up our pop-up and realized our table was broken. Well, then let's find how we can fix it. We didn't expect the table to break, but it did. So what is the problem? Now we can't cook meals. Okay, well, let's find a way to fix it. Not a big deal. Just something to be open about.
Well, you're an engineer. I'm sure you'd find a solution.
Yes, I hack something together.
So one of the things I ask people who come on the podcast are for books that have helped them in their careers, but also relevant to the topic. And without a doubt, your books that are relevant to the topic are the most unusual I've seen. So the first one is Life on the Margin. Can you tell me a little bit about that book?
Life on the Margin is a book by these two individuals who also quit their job. I can't remember the exact profession they did, but one day they decided that what they had was enough, so they sold everything they had. They sold their house, their belongings, and one of them, I think, bought a boat, and he started just cruising from port to port all around the United States and the Caribbean islands. And instead of being an engineer, he started doing day trading, which seems to work for him. And he just goes and explains how he could do it and how he successfully raised children along with his wife, and how he tackled several different things that went on with their traveling experience. So that was kind of the book that really pushed me to really think about making this adventure happen. So I would recommend it to anybody who is interested in doing something similar.
So was this something that did you know about this book before you planned, before you wanted to go on this, or was this the thing that helped you decide to go on it?
It's the one that I read that pushed me to think about going. So it was a surprise. I did not expect to find this kind of information in this book. Like I mentioned earlier, I was looking for investment strategies, but this is what came out. But it was a really good surprise, and I recommend anybody to read it.
And then the second book on your choices relevant to topic is the SAS Survival Handbook, Revised Edition for Any Climate in Any Situation by John Lofty Wiseman.
Yes. So
tell me
many
about
people
that
will
one.
Say that, you know, leaving your city and going, you know, out of nowhere, living in a camper for a prolonged period of time, you will have challenging situations ahead. And so this book is a little bit on the extreme side of the survival situation. It was written by a commander of the Special British Forces. So it really teaches you the most extreme ways that you could survive in any situation, from being lost in the desert, from being up in the Arctic without food and clothes and water. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to venture on this trip and I want to be still safe, I might as well read this one and at least know that in the worst case scenario, I probably could figure out a way to make it. And so it's kind of an interesting read. Not so much for practicality. Most of the stuff in this book I will never use. Hopefully I will never have to use anything in that book, but it was just a very interesting read to see how tough humans can be and how many things we're capable of, even in the most desperate situations.
Have you used anything at all from the book yet?
Not yet, and I'm glad I didn't.
No. Oh, actually, did you do anything like first aid courses or how to stitch a wound or anything of that nature before you left?
No, I wouldn't say so. But a lot of the things that you find on first aid courses are definitely into this book. There is the one part that struck me the most about that book was a part where they instruct you on how to do a emergency tracheotomy on a person. So if their throat gets stuck with something and you can get the obstruction out, how to perform a tracheotomy on the spot, which is a knife and a pencil. Which was pretty intense to read. So
that's probably the best tip I've received yet on this podcast. Then one of your choices for the most relevant for your career was Code Complete, which is a book I love as well. I find that not a lot of people seem to know about it, which is a little bit odd.
Yeah, it's a popular book. I didn't know if I should quote it since it's such a famous book and so many people have read it before and praised it. But like you said, many people still do not know about it or haven't read it. And I really think that there's something for everybody to learn in that book. It doesn't matter if you're a student, a professional, or a retired person. If you code, there is something valuable for you to read out of that book.
Yeah, I found that every once in a while I go back to that book, or I go back to some of the very basic C# books, and I reread some of the basics, but with an extra couple of years' experience, I understand something slightly differently, and it helps me to go back over this, you know, the simple stuff. Why, you know, how do I abstract this out a little bit better? How would I make this a little more cohesive, or how would I make this a little bit more separable? And going back over those books at any point in your career, I think, is fantastic.
I agree. I also really like the fact that he referenced a whole lot of other material that you can read to expand on a particular topic. So anytime you want to read something more specific, you just go to that book and, oh, there's a list of recommended readings.
If people want to follow you on your blog or get in touch, how would they do that, Piero?
The best way to do it would be to follow me on Twitter. My username is Piero Toffi, T-I-E-R-O-T-O-F-Y. I'm always eager to meet new people, and I try to tweet almost every day, so that would be the best way to do it.
All right, I'll put a link to your blog and to your Twitter feed as well. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Piero.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
The opening music, as always, is The Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Gymnopédie No. 1 by Eric Satie, performed by Kevin MacLeod.